Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at Darren Aronofsky's new film, Caught Stealing. Yeah, new Austin Butler feature. Huh? It's in New York, and he's running around, stole some money from the mob or something. We saw it. We watched it. We're going to let you know what we thought. We're also going to take a look at Hell of a Summer. This is a 2023 joint over on Hulu. This is from one of those kids that made Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard. It's his first directorial feature, along with a buddy of his. It's about a bunch of camp counselors, big Gen Zers, who end up getting caught up in this slasher killer thing out at a summer camp. A little Friday the 13th. It's a good time. We'll talk about it in a minute. We're going to talk about some trailers. Dude, there's way too many good movies coming out, all right? We got through the summer. Now we're getting into Oscar season, awards season, right? So we're getting a lot of cool trailers. We're going to talk about Wuthering Heights. I want to talk about 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple. Begonia's got a new trailer. Stick around. We're going to talk about all of it. Before we get to everything, we're going to talk about the news. The premiere story this week, the headline story, all the other film news, get out of the way. We got a Superman sequel coming. I can't believe James Gunn dumped this on Twitter like hours ago. Breaking news here on Off Script. Andy, what do you know about this?
Man, I saw this announced about 5 minutes after James Gunn had posted it, and I just about lost my mind, as I am prone to do. My hype train flew off the hype tracks, and I was just so excited. So the sequel is being called Man of Tomorrow. And we got James Gunn posted some of Jim Lee's artwork. He's a famous comic book writer and artist of Superman and Lex Luthor in the big powered up robot suit that Lex Luthor sometimes wears. And the thing is, James Gunn has been a little coy about this because he's been asked, you know, are you writing a Superman sequel? Do we have it? And he's like, well, it's not exactly a sequel. It's he's hesitated to say exactly what it is. I think this is a team up movie. I think we're gonna get. Because we're getting Supergirl next summer, Woman of Tomorrow. We're getting the Clayface movie, not related to this, obviously. And then I think we're going to kind of do a team-up movie because we have a lot of heroes already. We have the Justice Gang that we met in Superman. We're going to meet some new people in next year's film. And then it looks like we're going to have one. It's one of these, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and anticipating something like Superman and Lex Luthor teaming up to fight someone like Brainiac or Darkseid or one of these big villains, which I think is really smart. Like, they're just going, and when Marvel was cooking in the 2010s, they were cranking out their big movies year after year. Like, you like the next summer you could look. I look at that 2016 run they had, Civil War, Thor Ragnarok, Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame. Like, 4 years, one after the other, you just had these big hits. And they're kind of doing that. I mean, they're just on a production fast track, which is, I think, really smart. I'm really excited about this. What do you think?
It seems really cool. It was a really wild announcement just to see him drop an image and just say, hey, here it is. Here's the title. Here's what we're doing. You know, it looks awesome, right? The last Superman movie, I don't want to do spoilers really, but it's all about brain over brawn, right? Like Lex is smart. Superman is strong. That's where part of your core conflict comes from. You put Lex in a suit, he's got to do it himself, right? He's like, well, I don't need a team around me. I'm smarter than everybody. I can build my own solution to beating Superman, right? And I'll do it myself. Like, smart feels like a good follow-up. I don't know a lot about Man of Tomorrow. I don't want to know a lot about it now because I know this is coming. I'd rather see it in theaters. I tell you what, speaking of a good production slate for DC, this certainly points to a stacked 2027. Somebody had the numbers here. We got in 2027, if this works out, if none of these comic book movies get canceled, let me give you a quick peek at the lineup, what we got coming up that year. June 2027, Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man feature. July 2027, Man of Tomorrow, Superman feature. October 2027, Batman Part 2, Batman feature. December 2027, Avengers Secret Wars, Avengers feature. That's Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and Avengers all in the same year. Absolutely insane. And such a hilariously far cry from where we were just a few years ago when we were getting like the Eternals and Shang-Chi in the same year. And we were all wondering where the good heroes are. They're here. They all figured it out. We're getting the good heroes out. Get out the good China, right? Get out the good silverware. Like, we're going to need it for 2027. What are the odds some of those get delayed? Andy, we've been doing this a minute. Come on. What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, you have a hard time calling your shot too far out. I mean, even this day, this summer 2027, that could move as well. It could be pushed to Christmas. Like, you never know what might delay things. Things might change in production or the actors or writers. You never know. I think Spider-Verse is most likely to move because that's already been moved several times. it's like 4 years past of when they said they were going to come out. Secret Wars, I think, really depends on the success of Avengers Doomsday. And I think if Doomsday is a bit of a flop or underperforms, they might push that, give that some more breathing room as well.
It's such a shame, dude. K-pop Demon Hunters is sitting where Spider-Verse should be right now. That's what Sony Pictures Animation was doing instead of Spider-Verse. And it's a huge hit and it's doing great. And it's like, boy, if only y'all had been working on the next feature you said you were going to make. But whatever. I'm glad they're still doing good. Thank God there's a place for good animation outside of Disney. Thank God there's a place for good superhero movies outside of Disney, too. Call of Duty is getting a movie. I don't believe it. I guess I can't be that surprised, though. Yeah, this is coming from Paramount. Microsoft and Activision have penned a deal. We're making a Call of Duty feature. It's going to be great. What do you know about this, Andy?
Well, the video game movie, as we talked about last week with Gen Z, is here to stay, and studios are starting to buy up the big popular properties. This is what happened in around the year 2000 after the success of the first X-Men movie. All the studios started buying up comic book properties. Well, now they've moved on to video game properties since that's such a huge part. And we're going to be getting a Call of Duty movie, possibly a whole franchise series. That, you know, they're going to start with one movie, which is, I think, smart. They're not announcing like a trilogy or a universe. They're like, let's make one, see how it does, and they reserve the right to make more films and TV, of course, more games. Like we said, this is where the industry is moving. It's a smart move, and I'll be interested to see what kind of story they kind of form around this.
Oh, I can tell you exactly the story they're going to form around this. This is informed by every recent big blockbuster adaptation, all right? Used to be when you would adapt a video game, you'd want to do a different story, or you'd want to take a different angle, or take a new approach. It's not in the video games, right? To keep it fresh for new audiences while inviting other fans in. Not so. Not anymore. This is not going to be like the Halo TV show or like that old Final Fantasy movie, The Spirits Within, from like the early 2000s. This is going to have every element of everything that's good in the video games on screen. So you're going to get your Modern Warfare cast. You're going to have your like Captain Price, who's like that Scottish captain with like the big red beard who goes everywhere, a big red mustache. You're going to have your like Soap McTavish, who's like a guy. One of the ghost, the guy with the stupid like face mask with the skull painted on it, he's going to be in this movie for sure. I don't even know if there's a script or anything, but it would be stupid not to put these things in here. Look at the success of a Super Mario Brothers movie. Look at the success of Mortal Kombat. Sonic the Hedgehog, right? Like, give people exactly what they want. Don't do this thing you do in Call of Duty games where you're like telling a new story with a new squad of elite operators who got to go to the far side of the world and to some black site. And that's all junk. Don't do any of that. Just do exactly what people expect. That'll get asses in seats, I think.
Yeah, it's funny because I definitely played the original Call of Duty in like 2002, 2003 on the Xbox 360, and I played several versions of that game. The Black Ops series has been really popular, but I'm also old enough that game has definitely passed me by, and it's just too quick for these old hands. But it's been a hugely successful property for 25 years, $30 billion in revenue over that time. I think it's a really smart move, and I'm anxious to see what they come up with.
It's fitting it's over at Paramount because that feels like the place you'd want to put like a military shooter, right? For some reason. Is it just me, or is Paramount becoming like the Republican streaming service? I think it kind of is, with like Yellowstone and Landman over there, and like, I don't know. Yeah, Call of Duty feels like a sharp fit. I just feel like it's like the, you know, come over here if you're a free thinker kind of service. You know what I mean? We don't do all that woke stuff on Paramount Plus. So like, we keep it tight. I don't know. Keep it on Oscar for Call of Duty and Paramount. We got to talk about the box office. Weapons wins the weekend, I think. Although Jaws had a real good run with their 50th anniversary screening. I actually, funny story, when I was coming out of Caught Stealing, I popped my head into Jaws for a minute on IMAX just to see if it was a cool part. It wasn't. It was, I don't even remember what was happening. I watched the screen for like 3 seconds and left because I was afraid I was going to get thrown out. But, you know, quite the vandal stealing screen time. What do you know about the weekend, Andy?
So a little bit quiet weekend for Labor Day, which it often is, except for this time last year when they released Deadpool Wolverine, which was obviously a massive hit, but that's obviously an anomaly. It's usually kind of a week going time as people are going back to school, maybe getting in one last trip or traveling some. But Weapons did win the weekend with $10 million and has grossed $232 million globally on a $40 million budget. Huge win for Zach Cregger and Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers continues to have just a banner year at the movies. And yes, Jaws came in second with $8.2 million, the 50th anniversary. I definitely need to give it a rewatch. Really surprising for something that's 50 years old, but is obviously a classic. Caught Stealing, which we're going to be talking about in a second here, just under 8 million, 13 million worldwide. Weak start, but it's we're kind of in that month or that era of film, the fall, September, October. It's the weak titles start to come out. Freakier Friday came in 6.7 million, 130 million worldwide, also a big hit at another $40 million movie as well that continues to do well. And The Roses, which is like the third or fourth remake of The War of the Roses. There was a classic version with Michael Douglas in 1989. This version, of course, starred Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch. Came in at fifth with 6.3 million, 15 million worldwide. A little on the weak side, but it might get some legs. It'll definitely probably do some numbers on streaming. But we're into the fall season and things slow down a lot from the summer.
Yeah. I think it's really funny that Roses did just a little bit better overseas than it did here. And it's a shame because Roses seems like the kind of like small feature that, you know, two decades ago would have been rocking. You'd have one of those every weekend at the box office. Caught Stealing, I wish had done a little better, but I guess it's, you know, not a lot of people went and saw The Whale. Like, that didn't do that outstanding. And that was Aronofsky's last feature. This one seems a little bit more exciting, but even still, it's a small player. Dude, Weapons with nearly a quarter of $1 billion. Like, good God. Good God. And they needed that on only $40 million. Imagine what would happen if we gave Zach Cregger $80 million, right? That's Hollywood math. He'll make a half a billy. I'll bet, who is it, Capcom making a Resident Evil movie? They could not be more excited to have Zach Cregger on the front of that right now. That's what he's doing next. And in interviews for Weapons, he's talking about how much he's looking forward to making it. Oh my God, he's promoing your movie on his last movie. Like, dude, oh, they could not be more pleased to have him on. So I'm glad Weapons is doing good. I'm glad Jaws is continuing to take a bite out of the box office, right? And otherwise, you know, pretty good weekend. Also, Fantastic Four just barely scraping over the 500 million mark and making 511, I think, total. No, I've got that wrong. Superman made 611, excuse me, 611 million. Fantastic Four just made 500 million. It's over $1 billion for Disney with their superhero movies. Fantastic Four makes 500 million. Captain America Brave New World made $415 million, and Thunderbolts made $382 million. Hard to believe Thunderbolts was the worst performer out of all of those. Guess it makes sense that Fantastic Four was the best. None in top Superman, which I think is really telling. We'll have to see how Supergirl does, I guess.
Yeah. It's definitely been a down summer. It's been a good summer for movies, but it's been less movie-going than in years past, even the last 2 years, which were closer to the pandemic. See, we're farther out now, so you have a hard time blaming the pandemic now that we're 5 years past. That did change a lot of movie-going habits, but I think it's just been a little bit of a down summer. Any other summer, all those movies do way better. It's just very different. It used to be one Marvel movie would make $1.2 billion. That's what happened last summer, and now you have three that it took you three to get there, and none of them really doing it as much business as they had hoped.
You know, going into October or going into September here, sliding into the fall, I feel like I've seen a lot of like retro throwback screenings like Jaws coming up. I saw Disney's doing an IMAX thing for Tron, which is good because I really want to see Tron Legacy on a big screen again. But I think it's only like a one-time double feature to go in front of the new Tron Ares. Like you gotta get a ticket to go see both. They just announced Avatar The Way of Water is coming to IMAX the first week of October, I think, for a limited engagement for a week. You can go see Avatar 2 again. It just seems like IMAX is getting a lot of nostalgic kind of throwback love, which is a good time. I really just want to take the opportunity to say that I wish my local IMAX had some more options because they just put up tickets for Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another today, and I couldn't get them within like 2 hours of them going live because it's sold out. Love it. They should make more IMAX or something. Clearly it's successful. Like, clearly people like them. We need more large format screens, huh? Something to compete, maybe? Like, can we get some bulldozers out here and put up something grand? I don't know.
Well, I have noticed also that a lot of times when they start selling advanced tickets, they will only do like one or two show times a day, and they'll let those fill up, and then they'll add the others. And it's always the most expensive show times. It's like the 7 p.m. show time that's the only one available. And then closer to the actual release date, then they'll open up the 5 p.m., the 3 p.m. later, that sort of thing. So there will be more show times, but they definitely try to fill those premium seats first.
I want one of those Odyssey first screening passes so bad, dude. They like send them to people and they look so cool and they got like gold font on them. Like, you're going to be the first to see Christopher Nolan's Odyssey.
I would frame
that. Dude, I'm like, and I think if I had it, I probably wouldn't care as much. I'd just be like, oh yeah, that's cool. I'd like slip it in my closet with my taxes or something. But like seeing it online and not being able to get it, Forbidden Fruit, oh, it kills me, dog. Anyway, we got to talk about Aronofsky. We got to talk about Caught Stealing. Andy has agreed to take the summary on this. Andy, please take it away.
Caught Stealing? So this is the latest feature from Oscar-winning director Darren Aronofsky, who I believe is in director jail right now, based on the book and screenplay by Charlie Houston. Charlie Houston wrote this in 2000 or so, turn of the century. It's a crime caper that he then adapted the screenplay for. Aronofsky, of course, known for things like Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, Black Swan, which he won an Oscar for, Mother, The Whale, which he also won an Oscar for. So he's an Oscar-winning director, usually does some very bold things, and he's kind of going back. This is one of those one for them situations, I think, where he's doing this kind of very standard crime capers for the studio. This stars Austin Butler as Hank Thompson, a former baseball player, now alcoholic bartender, who just kind of floating through life, not a whole lot of direction, life of the party, great guy, everyone loves him, big baseball fanatic. He calls his mom every day. They talk about the game. He has a love interest in Zoe Kravitz's Yvonne, who they have this situationship going on. She's helping him out. She's trying to get him sober because he's deep into the alcohol. One day, his next door neighbor, Russ, played by Matt Smith as a 90s punk rocker, needs him to look after his cat. Russ is leaving the country. He's got to go see his dad in England, watch the cat. Hank, being the good person he is, does exactly that. Eventually, some gangsters come by saying, hey, where's Russ? We need to talk to him. And he doesn't want to divulge information. They beat him up, and he's dragged into this world of crime and corruption, drugs, money, and his head's all on the platter if he doesn't figure things out. He's got to try to get the money to the right people. He's got to get back in communication with Russ. Lots going on. Some of this works, some of it doesn't. Zach, what do you think?
So I think Caught Stealing is mostly a fun time, but I think it's ultimately a little too complicated for its own good. There's kind of a problem of too many characters in Caught Stealing, and you start to lose track of like who's double-crossing who now and who owes money to what. There's a sequence where a couple characters like rapidly explain to another towards the end of the movie like how it all comes together, all the pieces, right? What Liev Schreiber's doing over here and why Regina King is in this movie. Everybody clicks into place, and like I still couldn't really get to the bottom of it. And I'm sure somebody in the comments will be like, what do you mean? You're an idiot. But like, dog, like Aronofsky's working off of Houston's book. Like, it just seems like it kind of serves a few too many masters. I really like Hank. I really like what Austin Butler is doing in here. Though he's a little low, I think, on the charisma. Like, he reminds me a bit of like 90s Keanu Reeves. Like, he just can't get like a lot of big energy out of him because he's doing this like low rumble voice thing that he does ever since Elvis. He comes alive in the action. There's a couple sequences when he's like real hammered because he is an alcoholic in this movie. Like that's when he comes alive. That's like, there's a sequence where he get like kind of gets a little bit of torture, and it's good. He's like running down the street. That's where I feel it. But like outside of that, he's a little low. The plot's a little complicated. I think it's fine. I don't think it's his best. I don't think it's his worst. What do you think?
I think this is a movie from the wrong era. This feels like a 2000s movie. Again, when I saw the trailer, I was like, this reminds me of Guy Ritchie and things like Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels from the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's exactly that kind of film where there's a complicated caper. There's lots of colorful gangsters. We got our good guy in a pickle he's got to get out of, and how's he going to do it? But it's a poor imitation of those movies. Those movies have so much style and so much like interesting camera work and all these really fun characters, like people I still remember, like Gorgeous George and Bricktop and other these colorful gangster names. And this just seems real kind of rote and paint by number in a lot of ways. He kind of gets pulled into this really randomly and is really brutally tortured. A lot of this, like the tonal shifts are really stark, because I'm like, what kind of, this is like Hostel or Saw for part of this. And then like the trailer is very like, oh, it's a fun gangster comedy thing. So there's these just kind of weird tonal shifts. The plot is a little bit too convoluted. And you just kind of don't buy a lot of these characters. No one is in it enough. Matt Smith is great when he's on screen as he's got a thick London accent, really hamming up the punk rock stuff. He's only in like a third of the film. Same thing with Zoe Kravitz. Like, it's like they couldn't afford for these big actors to be on screen at the same time. Like, they don't really interact. And he's just a real cliche character. He literally has a save the cat moment, which in screenwriting, they teach you got to have a save the cat moment, which is when your protagonist does something positive or to have the audience like what they do. And he literally saves the cat. That's what, and it's like, what are we doing? It's just so on the nose. So that stuff didn't really quite work for me, but I do think the performances are pretty good. And I do think there's some interesting cinematography in this. It does give you that real gritty New York feel more than something like Highs to Lowest, which was like, hey guys, you know, the Statue of Liberty, here's the Statue of Liberty. We're in New York. This kind of gave you a little bit more of a grounded place of like, no, look at the gritty bars and the streets and the apartments and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those New York's a character kind of features. And it's set in 98, so you don't got to worry too much about like people not using their smartphones because they don't really have them. They definitely have some like loose flip phones. It's pretty basic, but mostly it's like landlines and simple communication, which makes the plot easy. Characters, I think, are fine. I like what Butler's doing in here, but like I said, like I just feel like sometimes he's a little too underbaked. And I kept thinking of how he is in like Bike Riders. And I was reflecting on how Bike Riders holds him at arm's length, right? Bike Riders is told through a different character's like story, looking at him. Like, you never really inside his head in Bike Riders. So I was like, that actually kind of makes sense that he's like this stoic individual there. And Elvis, it's a bit more, but it's kind of the same thing. It's a voyeuristic look at the king's life. Hank has to hold the whole movie. Like, you got to get the whole thing through him here. And it's fine in the dark bits, which are heavy, like you said. I think the marketing like misleads it to make it look like a bit more like a comedy caper, and it almost shouldn't be. Like, it really shouldn't be what it is. But like, more importantly, it just seems like, I don't know, Aronofsky couldn't get the energy out of him that he wanted. And that's not true, because this is what we got. He directed it like he wanted. But I'm also like Regina King. I've seen Regina King be a monster on screen, dude. And her character in this kind of isn't, and I feel like she's trying to be. Her delivery feels earnest. Like, I feel like King is approaching this like this is real serious stuff, but she's got this goofy haircut, and it just kind of doesn't work that good. Like, Kravitz is really solid. Kravitz is great. Matt Smith is exceptional. I it's funny because the first time you see him, I didn't fall for the punk rocker thing. It was just kind of lame. By the time he comes back into the movie, he's a much needed bolt of lightning to get things moving again and back on track. So he's solid. Couple of our other characters are good. Leif Schreiber's in there a bit. Like, everybody's fine. Also, like the cat, worth mentioning. This is a cat-friendly movie. There's a cat in here. It looks a lot like my cat, so I'm a bit pro there. And also, it's supposed to be a baseball movie. Not enough baseball. I really figured at some point we'd be running around in a field, but you know, they just kind of talk about it a lot, and you see a little bit of imagery. Like, you don't actually get that. But he could have been a football player, and it would have worked fine. Caught Stealing is weird because I felt like I struggled so much with some of the characters, and Aronofsky's last movie was all character. It was The Whale. It was like one set, right? And it had to be character. That's all we were doing. It was character direction, the movie. Whereas in this one, there's too many characters, and I feel like it kind of doesn't get there. Like, setting, place, the look of the movie, solid. Even the energy, action solid, fights are solid, running solid. The drama, like, that's where it gets tied up. That's where it gets complicated, and you start to kind of zone out because you don't remember who is the doing what or whose name that was. Like, just a couple too many there, and that's really just the script. Like, I think,
Yeah, I'd agree. And I saw someone else's review who said the book isn't very good, and they were hoping like the movie would improve on some of the shortcomings from the book. They're like, it really doesn't. And you can, and like you said, the drama just isn't there. Everyone else is more exciting than Butler for some reason. He is very reserved. He's almost too cool. Like, he's literally getting tortured in a couple of scenes, and he's like, oh, it's all right, don't worry.
He looks the part. He looks exactly like he needs to look. The blonde hair, like, he's got it. But yeah, it's the energy coming out of him. It's just a little low.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a poor imitation of better movies in this genre. It just seems something 20 years too late. And yeah, our characters, they're fun on their own. They just need to interact, act more. Like, I knew that Liev Schreiber is in, you're waiting forever for him to show up, and it's not quite as tight as these complex gangster films need to be.
Yeah, some decent laughs in there, though, I want to say. Not as often as you think. The movie's marketed more like a comedy than it actually is. Like, it's not quite as funny as I think they sold it as. It's much more dramatic. But some solid stuff in there, and also like some good dramatic filmmaking. There's a sequence when Hank starts to slip and he ends up drinking again when he's trying to get on back on the wagon, off the wagon, and on the wagon. I don't know. And Aronofsky tells all of the jump cuts of him drinking with like slow push ins, and then right when Butler realizes he's gone too far and Hank goes, oh no, I've made a huge mistake, it comes to pullouts. And it's the exact same. It's just pull out after pull out after pull out. And it's like, it's this great like breathe in, breathe out of dramatic filmmaking that I expect here. Like, really solid. Like, the action's great. Keeping up with Butler's fun. The plot's just a mess. Like, that's just kind of, that's the one thing about it. Like, if it could shake a few characters, I think, and just kind of tune up the motivations of why we have a bunch of money and who's got to get it and why it's important and you got to get here by this time, like, I think it'd work a lot better. That's the one thing.
I think the one thing I did enjoy is I think the action is done pretty well. There's a number of chases, of car chases, fight scenes, shootouts, probably some explosions here and there. That stuff is done really well. I think it's the first time I've seen Aronofsky really direct this kind of an action movie. I think that stuff works pretty well. It's probably some of the best parts of the movie. It's just like the script is just a little weak. The tragic backstory that seems real stock, not super convincing, or just not, you don't really feel too sorry for a thing. Like, I know what it's going for, but it just doesn't quite land for me.
Mm. Andy, would you recommend Caught Stealing?
I would say it's perfect for streaming. The performances are good, some good action. Script is all over the place, but I think it's worth putting on for 100 minutes once it comes to a streaming service near you.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It's all right. I think it's easy to compare it to Guy Ritchie features, and the problem is some of those Guy Ritchie features are just a little bit more memorable than this one. Like, some fun action, some good set pieces, but ultimately, like, yeah, wait for streaming. It's not too hot. Caught Stealing's fun. It's not Aronofsky's best. Definitely not his worst. We got to talk about some upcoming trailers. Andy, what do we call this segment?
It's time for the trailer park. So we have a bunch of trailers to talk about today. Some things, multiple came out just today. We'll get into. The first one, though, is Hamnet. That's right, Hamnet, not Hamlet. This is the newest film from Chloe Zhao that's going to be an Oscar contender based on a book, and it's about William Shakespeare and his wife, Anne Hathaway. Literally, that's her name. I believe it's a romance that stars Jesse Buckley and the great Paul Mescal. They are the couple. And I believe it deals with them and the loss of the child, which happened to Shakespeare in real life and was an inspiration for Hamlet. And so it seems like a big romance movie. Like, it's about this great relationship, but that struggles and has some difficulties, again, with the loss of a child. This trailer looked amazing. And I was like, Jesse Buckley, she's going to get a nomination for this. This is who Emerald Fennell wishes she was, who we'll talk about later. But this looks great. This comes out at Thanksgiving. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, this looks tremendous. Big, big, bold cinema. I heard they built like a 3/4 recreation of the Globe for this, which is Shakespeare's like original theater that this plays would be performed in. Like, big drama. Looks really meaningful. Looks really sad. Looks like a great time. I hammed it. Looks like it's going to be a big drama at the movies. I can't wait. And hey, new Chloe Zhao, right? Like, here I am ragging on the Eternals, and her next movie is nigh upon us. Can't wait to see it. I hope it's a banger. We got to talk about the trailer for The Carpenter's Son. This one's a weird one, man. This is a trailer for a horror film based on Jesus, life and times, and more specifically, his son that we don't really talk about in in Christianity, I guess. Normal religious circles, I should say. This is Nick Cage playing Jesus, playing the Son of God. He appears to have a son, and there appears to be some strange demonic works happening nearby, likely related to his divine connection, of course, to the heavens. It's a teaser. There's no dialogue. It's real light. It reminds me a bit of, like, the Long Legs teaser, even in, like, the font treatment for The Carpenter's Son in it, with, like, this red fuzzy font where the letters are pushed up next to each other. Like, that's right out of Long Legs. Real simple. It's like 22 seconds. I know it's coming from an Egyptian director named Lotfi Nathan, I think is his name. Lotfi Nathan. So hasn't done a lot. Real small. Real indie. Kind of looks like Nick Cage getting a check. Could be hot indie feature for all we know, right? We've seen movies like that. What do you think, Andy?
Nick Cage is the most side-questing actor I know. Like, he's always just popping up in stuff that you had no idea he was in. Because most actors, they'll have their projects announced way ahead of time. You'll know all about it for years. And then this just pops up, and it's like Nicolas Cage as Jesus Christ in some sort of religious horror movie. That looks really, really creepy. I was like, oh, God, this looks really, yeah, it was disturbing. Gave me chills, and so I'm excited for this. Have no idea really what's going on, but excited to see Nick Cage as Jesus. Next we have Bugonia, which we got the full trailer for. This is the latest from Yorgos Lanthimos. I struggle to describe what kind of movie it's going to be. This stars Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone. Jesse Plemons plays a regular worker, like worker B, who kidnaps Emma Stone's Emma Stone's like a big high-powered CEO type person, and then they kidnap her, and the twist is they think that she's an alien trying to destroy the Earth. And one of the first things that we heard about this movie is that Emma Stone shaved her head but we hadn't seen why, and we get some glimpses of that because after she's kidnapped, they shave her head, and she just looks really bizarre. Like, she's got this white paint on her, and I was like, she looks like a zombie. And this whole movie just looks so wild and incredible. Lots of weird action and things going on. I don't know, but I'm so prepared for it.
Oh, dude. We talked about this with the teaser. It's a movie for freaks. It's the freak movie, and it's here for us, right? It's got the new Chapel Roan on it. This looks delightful. I can't wait. This looks so weird. Two guys kidnap a high power CEO and functionally torture her, convinced that she's an alien. I mean, over under, Andy, big twist. Is she an alien? What do you think? I'm going to say no, but Yorgos Lanthimos is a kind of weird director. I feel like he would just make her an alien, right?
No, I'm thinking no, because they think she's an alien because they think she's here to destroy the Earth the way, like, corporations tend to destroy the planet is, I think, the idea. It's a bit of an environmental thing, I think. I think it's probably pretty grounded. It's more exciting that way than if she is actually an alien, I think. That looks really wild. That comes out on Halloween Day, October 31st.
Speaking of Halloween, we got to talk about a horror feature coming in January. All right, not quite in October, but this is one you might know. 28 Years Later, Bone Temple. Yeah, we got a trailer for this thing. The follow-up to 28 Years Later, right? And only, what, 7 months after the previous one? They shot this movie basically right alongside the last one. And I think, I don't know if they've actually shot the third in the series yet.
Not
but
yet.
I remember saying that, they were going to greenlight these real fast. This is produced by Danny Boyle, the director of the previous one, written by Alex Garland, same writer. New director, Nia DaCosta. She previously did Candyman, which I really liked, and something cool in front of that that I think people liked her more for. And I can't remember what it was.
Marvels also.
Marvels, great, solid. Yeah, Bone Temple picks up right after the events of 28 Years Later. We have our young lad loose in the zombie-ridden hills of England alongside What, like a Jimmy Savile lookalike, right? Jack Rayner, I think, is running around with his squad of blonde-clad goons who are all whacking zombies. Ray Fiennes running around in iodine-covered orange now, and he's talking to something. Like, I don't know, man. It's a whole lot of tone. It reminds me a lot of the previous trailer with the old broadcast running over the top of it. Action, adventure, and looks to be quite scary. Maybe more scary than the previous one. What do you think of this trailer, Andy?
Man, so I was awake at like 2 a.m. because that's just, I'm a night person. And I scrolled to Twitter and I saw this posted at like 2:15. And I was like, oh my God. So I watched it right away. Really excited. This looks great. If you remember from the last one, not to get into spoilers, but we meet Ralph Fiennes, Dr. Kelsen, who kind of is the steward of this bone temple that he has built, and he's becomes kind of a positive figure in young Spike's life. And then we also meet Jack Rayner and his gang of tracksuit-laden Jimmy Savile-inspired cult of some sort. And so in this movie, we see a little bit of both. We see maybe a history of Dr. Kelsen and the Bone Temple, and then we also see this cult come to life, and we see young Spike get joined, maybe probably against his will a little bit. It looks really exciting, really scary. The alpha zombie is back. And one thing I know is that Danny Boyle said the first movie is about the nature of family, the nature of good in a lot of ways. The second movie is about the nature of evil. So this one, I think, is going to be some pretty dark stuff. Looks really great.
Love it.
Last one we're going to get into, Wuthering Heights, which is the latest film from Emerald Fennell, who previously did Promising Young Woman and, oh, I'm blanking on the
Saltburn.
Second.
Saltburn. Saltburn. Yeah,
I was Saltburn. We've come down a little bit divisive on her. I think she's a great director, but a poor writer. So we'll see what she does on this. Wuthering Heights is obviously a classic novel. This is going to star Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi in our lead roles. We get this trailer that it has a very period look, but has a very modern score. It's got a Charlie XCX song over it. Some people are complaining about that already. I don't really know what to think because I haven't really liked her work in the end. I feel like she gets 2/3 of a good movie and then doesn't really know how to finish it. I'm interested to see what she does on someone else's material. I think this looks great. I think it looks promising, but we've been let down before. So, Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, we said in our Saltburn review back when we covered that, Saltburn has immaculate vibes. Saltburn looks like a great movie. Saltburn acts like a great movie. But then it takes some real wild twists in the writing that I think really hurts it. And I think a lot of people came out of it feeling that way. Wuthering Heights, again, similar, like, great looking trailer. Sounds great. I love the visuals. They're big, they're bold, they're dark, they're shadowy, they're bright, they're horny. Everybody's pushing dough into things and kneading skin on hands. I hear this movie's got a whole lot of sex in it. That's all great. I'm down for all that. But here's me showing my hand. I haven't read Wuthering Heights. I don't know a lot about it. All right, so I'm going in pretty blind. But B, I hear people saying that she's got some radical ideas in here that I think may drive folks away, like she kind of did in Saltburn again. And I hope that's not the case. Like, I really, really wanted to like Saltburn. I really liked the first half of Saltburn. Like, I had a lot of fun with the first half of that movie. And then it just goes somewhere I didn't expect. And while I do think that's where Emerald Fennell is taking us, I hope this time I'm a little bit more pleased on that back end because, yeah, I just struggled with it in a way that I hope I don't hear. Margot Robbie's the back. Good to see her. Jacob Elordi, lots of fun. Come on, it's Wuthering Heights. I hear a lot of book girlies are into it. My main squeeze here wants to go see this with me, so... And it's coming out Valentine's Day. God, you know, it's going to make a killing just because of that. Like, that'll help it, you know, like a lot of romance stuff. Go see Wuthering Heights, you know, it's got Jacob Elordi and Margot Robbie in it. So I think it'll do good. I don't know. I hope I like it more. That's how I feel. With that, I got to talk about the last film we're talking about on this episode. Let me get this queued up here and I got it. Boom. Here it comes. The movie is Hell of a Summer. So, Hell of a Summer is the story of Jason Hochberg, who is a too old to be still be a camp counselor at Pineway Summer Camp. He's been invited back this summer, even though after last year, he crashed out and said he was never going back to watch over the camp once again with a few other camp counselors. He arrives at Pineway along with some of the other counselors just a few days before all of the campers are supposed to arrive, and they start to notice that something's amiss. The owners, John and Kathy, are missing. And then slowly, one by one, our Gen Z camp counselors start to realize that they too are going missing and that something is violently wrong here. There is, in fact, a killer on the loose at Pineway Camp, and it could be any one of them. So they're going to have to be on their toes if they're going to catch him and make it out alive before dawn. The movie is a comedy, and it comes from first-time directors Billy Brick and Finn Wolfhard. Finn Wolfhard, who you know from Stranger Things and those new Ghostbusters movies. He's that brunette kid with the big curly hair, right? He plays Mike in Stranger Things, and he's in this along with Billy. They are two of the counselors. We have a handful of other not-so-well-knowns also playing counselors here, and it's a small feature. It's a small cast. It's mostly teenagers. It's directed by teenagers, and most importantly, it is a send-up of these old slasher films, but through a modern lens with a script written by, teenagers, like who feel like they see the world like a teenager would, who are very accepting of one another and respectful of each other's dietary restrictions and views on, I don't know, sex and romance and ethnicity and censorship. Like, it's got a lot to say. It manages to do it in a pretty fun framework. We saw it on Hulu. It came out in 2023. It is streaming now over there. Andy, what did you think of Hell of a Summer?
So I wasn't sure what to think initially. It's a pretty low budget kind of look, but I ended up enjoying it in a weird way in that, it's a low budget film, but it's actually really pretty funny. The writing is pretty smart. There's a lots of one-line zingers that really made me laugh, made me chuckle. It's a first feature, and it's a young first feature, but I think it's a really smart move by Finn Wolfhard to get behind the camera, really leverage that Stranger Things fame, and it's a movie proving that he knows how to make a movie. It's more for him to show other studios, hey, this I made this. Let me make another movie or a bit bigger movie. The plot is more or less cliche, but there's just a lot of really funny moments. There's, for instance, there's a time when the killer is choking someone. He's got him in a chokehold, and the guy starts tapping out like you do in MMA. Starts tapping, and he's like, "What are you doing? I'm trying to choke you. I'm trying to kill you. You can't tap out of this." And it's a bit of a joke a minute kind of things where they just go by really quickly. The very opening scene, we have our older camp counselors playing guitar by the fire, and one keeps hitting the other one's hands with the bug zapper while he's trying to play guitar. And it's just like, it's dumb, but really kind of funny because like she keeps doing it and that thing hurts. So it's probably an authentic reaction. So I think that the writing is clever and smart. It's just kind of a cliche setup, and there's not a lot in the sets, but I think they're doing a lot with what they have, and it's a perfect streaming movie.
Yeah, it reminds me in that way, in that this is like a presentation of ability before getting like a larger budget for a bigger feature. It reminds me of Damien Chazelle's Whiplash. Small, pretty small cast, not a lot of sets, big ideas, and then this is enough to get us to fund La La Land, right? Like, that's kind of what this feels like. This is like a proof of concept. Like, it could have been a short film. It's a bit bigger, though. It's surprisingly solid. It's not perfect, and it's kind of great on streaming, I think. If I had seen this in a theater, I would have felt like it was a little underbaked, but this is notably better than a lot of direct-to-streaming features we watch, so if you're looking for something this October, I think Hell of a Summer is a hell of a pick. I really like the characters in this movie. Like, I love that a lot of them are a little flat, for sure, but our lead, Jason Hochberg, played by Fred Hechinger. It's crazy, man. He's been in four movies we've covered on this show. And watching this movie, I was thinking, this guy needs to get more work. He's very good. And then I went on IMDb and looked and was like, good God, he's been in four movies we've covered on this show. Most notably, he's the weird emperor brother in the new Gladiator movie alongside Joseph Quinn. They're twins, remember? They're like the two Caesars or whatever in that movie with the white face paint, Joseph Quinn. And then the other smaller blonde brother, it's him. That's this kid. Also, he's in The Pale Blue Eye over on Netflix, which we covered on this show. a couple of the joints I can't recall right now, but he is this golden ray of sunshine as Jason. He's got the blonde hair and he is always positive. Everything's going to be great at camp this year. It's kind of a little childish, honestly. As he's driving into camp with his mom, who's dropping him off, she's like, Jason, you really got to start looking at your career here and looking to grow. You can't just keep going to camp forever. But he's like, Mom, I love it. I love coming out here.
Paid me $150 a week.
Yeah, like he even talks about like wanting to maybe take over ownership of the camp. Like it is something he it is a passion that he pursues. In the same way that Billy and Finn are directing this feature in a passion that they like. So that is echoed through that. Meanwhile, Billy Brick and Finn Wolfhard are two goofy friends in this movie. They play Bobby and Chris, who are really funny as well. They both ride in Chris's stepdad's red sports car, and Bobby is trying desperately to get laid, and nobody wants anything to do with him, and everybody thinks he's kind of a moron, even though he's a perfectly nice guy. Meanwhile, Chris is like irresistible, and chicks are totally into him and love him, and Bobby is jealous. You've got Claire and Mike, Shannon, Ezra, a few others in there. You got a theater kid who's very dramatic and very gay and very funny. You got a nerd, like a crypto bro almost. It's good. You got a girl, a vegan, who's very specific on it. Somebody who's into social media. Like, you get these good little archetypes of all of these, like, Gen Z kids. Just kind of bounce off each other when bad things start to happen. It's comedy a la, like, Bodies, 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 right? Like, there is a scary thing happening, but we're still cracking jokes all the way down. And, like, we're taking it serious for plot, but our script is like very, very, very laughing, very, very self-effacing.
Right. It's definitely a Gen Z film for Gen Z kids and teenagers and young adults. And yeah, I was going to say we have those stereotypical, like the rich girl, the jock, the nerd, the vegan, a couple of will they, won't they relationships. So these kind of cliche or stereotypical roles that you have in these kinds of films, but it has a lot of fun with them, with a lot of the relationships that they don't necessarily go where you think it's going to go. And again, it's horror. There's a little bit of gore, but it's not scary. It's not too gruesome. It's mostly a fun time.
Yeah. It's tough because it starts to fall apart when you get to the actual like violence. Our killer's a little underbaked. It's supposed to be a generic killer. That's kind of what we're doing here, right? Like in its very presentation, like summer camp killer, obvious. But it's like, it's kind of a lame fit. It's like this weird pumpkin mask thing. It looks like they got at the dollar store. I guess that's part of the joke, but also like, come on, you know, you're doing a movie. Give a little flair. Make that knife shine in the moonlight, that kind of thing. Like give it a little bit of pizzazz. Also, like, it does end up being like a survive the night kind of feature, and the night is not all that interesting. Like, on like the 6 or 7 shot of kids like running in a field, I was like, okay, I got it. Like, we're, you know, it's fine. Like, we're kind of hiding out in cabins. We're kind of taking it slow. It's a lot of talking, and like, that's a good time as kids kind of get picked off one by one, but ultimately, like, I don't know. Yeah, it lacked a little bit of charisma in that way. Like, you want to see a little bit more flair. Give me a couple more, like, push-ins and whip pans. You know what I mean? Like, really, really take it off. Really take that thing out for a spin, you know? Like, but that being said, fundamentals here, really solid. Really solid. Enough to get a second feature, for sure. Like, give these kids more money. Let them make another movie. I think this is a solid first outing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think... Like I said, Finn Wolfhard, it's smart for him to leverage his fame and whatnot into a directing project this early, because a lot of those Stranger Things kids are doing different things. And so going in the direction of directing, I think, is really smart. And it's a good first outing. Like you said, the fundamentals are there. We do have a cohesive script. We have fun characters. And I think most importantly, it is really funny, and I'd like to see what more kind of he can do. And he's been that character a lot, especially in Stephen King's It. He's also that kind of smart, wisecracking character as well. So it's a little bit of a consistency that he does.
Yeah. Overall, though, I think solid. I got to know. Andy, would you recommend Hell of a Summer?
I would say it's perfect for streaming. It's on Hulu right now. I think it actually wrapped a while ago, or may have been released a little bit while ago. It's not too complicated. It's not too serious. It's got a lot of fun young Gen Z actors that you're going to be seeing in things to come for years. Good first outing from directors Finn Wolfhard and Billy Brick, who we also saw in Friendship just a couple of months ago. He sells a toad to Tim Robinson.
Yeah, it is that guy. Yeah.
So there's some good laughs, but it's not anything too complicated or serious. So I'd say a perfect for streaming.
That's funny. I was going to say Claire in this movie, she was in Knock at the Cabin. She's one of the cultists of the three or four that are with Dave Bautista. Yeah, it's like a small world. Yeah, Hell of a Summer is a lot of fun. Solid all the way through. Not a perfect movie, but great for streaming. Great for October. It's coming up. Throw it on. It's perfect. It's like 90 minutes. It's a quick burn. It's pretty funny. Like you're going to get some good laughs in it. Solid. Would recommend Hell of a Summer. Hell of a feature. Hell of a first feature. And that's the episode, man. Off script episode 306. Boy, came and went. One of our fastest to date. And that's probably because I cut a short segment late about us doing TV, but we'll get to it probably now. Well, actually, hold on. We're not doing it next week. Next week, we're taking a brief break. When are we coming back, Andy?
We'll be back on September 16th. I'm doing some traveling next week, so we're on break. But we'll be back with The Long Walk, which comes out September 12th. So that's not this Friday, the Friday after. That's the Stephen King, or based on the Stephen King short story written by J.T. Molnar about a kind of Mr. Beast-X video where these people have to walk until they die. And the last one standing wins the money. Some FYI releases this week, if you're interested. The Conjuring Last Rites, which is the fourth and final film in the Conjuring series comes out this Friday, September 5th. The rom-coms Splitsville, starring Dakota Johnson and Adria Arjona and more, also comes out this Friday, September 5th. And some things we'll be looking forward to this month: Him, the football horror movie produced by Jordan Peele, September 19th. A Big Bold Beautiful Journey, which is Margot Robbie's first movie since Barbie, September 19th, and of course, Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another at the end of the month, September 26th. But The Long Walk back on September 16th.
It is so funny to compare The Long Walk to a Mr. Beast joint, because between that and like Squid Games, that's like the man's rep, right, on the internet. Like you do, you make basic games that functionally torture people for a small reward and produce entertainment on it. It's really funny. I'm sure he does other stuff, right? He does charity things in some fashion. Also want to say, I watched the new trailer for A Big Bold Beautiful Journey in front of Caught Stealing. Man, that movie looks like it's not going to work. They do this thing at the end where like they say the title, the movie voice announcer comes on at the end with the title, A Big Bold Beautiful Journey. And I'm like, oh God, they got to tell the old people so that they know. And then at the end, it's like, coming to theaters, get your I'm like, oh God, they gotta tell people audio, like, hey, go get tickets now to go see this movie. But I like Margot Robbie and Colin Farrell so much, I might be willing to watch it anyway. Just because I like the two of them. God, those two just ooze charisma, dog. Like, Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie rock. If they believe it, maybe it's a good time. Or maybe not. It's this Ghost of Girlfriend's Past movie. I don't know. They're tripping through portals or something. Anyway, if you enjoyed the episode today, if you like what we're doing here on Off Script, the best way to support us is just subscribe to the show on your favorite avenue, platform of choice. All right, we're on YouTube doing big things over there. Love when people sub on YouTube. You can find individual reviews over there as well. Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, all these are social media places you can find us around. Audio, we're on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartMedia. Go throw us a rating and review over there if you can. Helps us out bigly, I think. That's how they say it over there. And you can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, and you can leave us email directly. Direct correspondence, you to us, at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. From all of us at Offscript, the home of Bolt Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.